Today's program is brought to you by Happy Chef Uniforms, the perfect style, whatever your recipe. Visit happychef.com to order your free 2018 catalog.
Hey, Food Radio listeners. I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie, and I'm really excited to share that we're launching a brand new show. Meat and Three is HRN's weekly food news roundup. Tune in for a deep dive and three tasty shorts every Friday evening. It's 15 minutes, so you can listen while you wait for your pizza. This week, the fight for universal free lunch in New York City public schools isn't over yet.
I'm overburdened. I'm overworked. I don't get staff when people are out.
Plus, Dana Cowan, former editor of Food & Wine magazine and host of HRN's Speaking Broadly, catches up with Valerie Lomas, the winner of the Great American Baking Show's Derailed Season 3. Discover how a Danish brewery is motivating people to get fit, and hear Allison Roman speak to the highs and lows of her cookie recipe going viral.
Every time I see anyone in a social setting, that's generally the first thing they ask me is, how are the cookies?
Be better informed and wildly inspired by the stories and people you hear on Meat and Three. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. On today's episode, Gaz Oakley grew up on the south coast of Wales in the UK. He aptly chose catering as a subject for his GCSE when he was 14, and from there on out, food became his core. For years, Gaz cooked in hotels, restaurants, but it wasn't until a few years ago that he decided to become vegan and truly found his voice in food. Avant-Garde Vegan started as an Instagram feed and now has over 200,000 followers, and then became a YouTube channel and now has over 400,000 subscribers. And now he's released his first cookbook, Vegan 100, that challenges the modern precepts of veganism with fun, flavorful recipes. Gaz, welcome
to
the States.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is kind of a felicitous thing because I forgot that I was vegan for a while. In college, I was vegetarian, and for about a year, I was vegan, and I actually broke my veganism while in Edgware, in London, because I got tired of eating halloumi sandwiches. You did the opposite.
Yes.
You were a meat-centric person living in Cardiff, living, you know, in the UK, and decided to drop all that meat.
Yeah, and I'm so happy I did, obviously, now with everything that's going on. But and being in the professional kitchens, you didn't think anything of veganism at the time. This was going back nearly 10 years ago. When a vegan came into the restaurant, we would be baffled of what to do, really. I never expected to go vegan. I actually did it overnight after watching a few documentaries and YouTube videos, and that was 3 years ago.
Yeah, what documentaries and YouTube videos were those?
So the YouTube video that really stuck in my head and made me switch completely was a speech by Gary Yourofsky, a vegan activist. But I also watched things like Cowspiracy, and it was enough to make me go vegan.
Yeah. When you were growing up, though, you were a meat eater.
Yes.
What did you and your family, you know, usually have for breakfast, lunch, dinner?
Well, so the reason I got into cooking was because my dad is a great cook. He still is. He cooks for my family every night, and he has done since I was a small kid. So as soon as I could stand above the kitchen counter, I'd be helping him in the kitchen. And that was from the age of, I don't know, 6, 7. So I've always been passionate about cooking. It wasn't until I got slightly older where, you know, I could take it as a GCSE subject in school, and it became more serious. But we were eating just simple stuff. My dad loved people like Jamie Oliver, Gordon Ramsay. We constantly had cooking programs on in the house. Some British chefs like Rick Stein, and who used to travel the world and cook. And that was something that I've always wanted to do, and hopefully I'll get the opportunity to do in the future.
Well, I mean, you made it to Brooklyn. That's a start.
I'm so grateful to be here, and what an amazing place. And the sun is shining today. It's beautiful.
You brought this over for us.
Yeah, because it's sunny all the time.
Yeah, exactly. this GCSE, General Certificate of Secondary Education, you did this at the right young age of 14. You chose to take catering as a discipline. What was that course, and why that decision?
it was actually quite strange to all my friends, because I was always into sport. I was in all the sports teams, and that was my passion. You know, at home I was cooking with my dad every night. I loved it. It was a way for me to express my creativity. And then at 13, you can choose your chosen subject. So my friends were choosing sport, art. You could choose two. So I chose art, and I chose catering, which is cooking. So it was just to learn the basics. I found that I was well advanced in comparison to lots of my classmates, and that was just because it's something that I did every night with my dad. So it was just an opportunity for me to just express my creativity, learn some of the basics. And at 15, they sent you out into a professional kitchen for a week, and that is where I fell in love with the adrenaline rush of kitchens, and realizing that in 1 week I learnt as much as I had done in, you know, my lifetime at home with my dad and in catering in school, just from the professional chefs around me, and sort of soaking up all their knowledge was amazing, just to get that in 1 week. So as soon as I turned 16, when we're allowed to leave school, I left, much to my parents' disappointment.
But you went to this place called Le Galois.
Le Galois, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was, I mean, you were only 16, 17 at that time. And again, you had chosen at 14 or 15 that this was your path. What were you doing at Le Galois, and did it make you want to continue down the restaurant role?
So basically, when I left school, I went back to the hotel where I did my work experience, and I worked there for a couple of years. And I found that I learned as much as I sort of could there. It was a great place to start off. But then I heard so much about this restaurant called Le Galois in Cardiff, and it had such a good reputation. And I heard the chef had traveled all around the world, lived in California, Japan, and getting all this amazing experience behind him. And he was cooking some amazing food in Cardiff. And it hasn't got an amazing food scene, but what he was doing was incredible. So one day I turned up at the door during just after a lunchtime service with my CV, with some pictures of my food, and just said to the chef, please, can I work for you for free? And this was at 17. I can't believe I had that confidence back then, but I was so driven. I wanted to go to Paris and become the best chef possible. And he must have sort of seen my enthusiasm. And a week later, he hired me after doing a trial shift. And that is where I learned how to cook properly. Being in that environment of all these different chefs who've traveled, who've been doing it for a huge amount of time, was just so good for me. Unfortunately, you know, the chefing industry is long, tedious hours, and at such a young age it was tough for me. I found myself sleeping in my car during short breaks throughout the day, getting totally burnt out, but the thrill of service and the food we were putting out was just so incredible. It was all worth it, and I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if I hadn't got that experience from Le Galois, because the food was just incredible.
Yeah, it was funny reading through your bio that after that you kind of left cooking for a while and became a salesman for civil engineering materials. I don't even want to know what those are. No. I almost want to skip over that part of your life. I don't know if you do too, because then you found this voice again in food by becoming a vegan. Yeah. And you said that choice was because of YouTube and you know, documentaries, but it's also this passion for creativity and the way that you could express yourself. Do you feel like your food, how has your food changed from before veganism to now? Aside from the obvious.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I'm still using the core, like fundamentals of cooking properly, making sure we're seasoning at every stage, bringing out the flavors. You know, I've had to change because, you know, lots of the time you're using that piece of meat or fish to create the dish. Now I'm recreating that sometimes, or I'm bringing in different flavors to try and get the same sort of bold flavors. But in terms of my presentation, the style of cooking, I'm still trying to do often French cuisine, modern food. So yeah, I think it has changed quite a lot, because often I'm asked to recreate stuff that people miss and I miss. So yeah.
Yeah, going through there, and we'll talk about this later, there are a lot of kind of quotations, fake meats, or, you know, fake, let's not use the word fake, replacement meats or replacement cheeses. Mm. it's interesting to hear from someone who, you know, turned vegan that they still miss certain meat things. What is it that you miss about certain meats or those flavors or those profiles that you then recreate?
I don't necessarily miss it. I just think that, you know, after 20 odd years of eating a traditional diet, you become accustomed to those flavors. And the reason I often do recreate these dishes is not because I generally miss them. It's because I think to myself that if a non-vegan is sort of playing with the idea of going vegan and realize they can have a fillet steak Wellington, which is in my book, cheeses, sausages, they're going to think, okay, I'm not going to miss that thing. I'm going to go vegan. So that is the reason I recreate these dishes.
Do you ever present those dishes to friends and family and not tell them that it's vegan?
I've always wanted to get like a food truck and dress it up in maybe like a traditional boarding, get all the designs right, and maybe do like a British fish and chip truck and just go to a seaside resort in the UK and serve up my tofu fish and see what people say, because the nori sheet that adds that taste of sea flavor is incredible, and it tastes like fish and chips. So
I know, I was looking at that photo and it was ingenious. Thank you. Know, and you use tofu and seitan and a lot of those things as replacement for meat, but adding that crispness and freshness of the sea through seaweed, it's quite inventive.
See, nori is an amazing ingredient. I've done scallops on my YouTube channel with king oyster mushrooms and poached them first in a broth with nori, and then I've actually reduced that down, added some oat cream, and made a taste of the sea foam. And it's like a dish that I would have served in Lagawa. I wish I had that knowledge of being able to play around with vegan ingredients. I would have loved to have served that up to the chef and said, "This isn't scallops. This is my king oyster mushroom scallops."
So what was the first photo that you posted on Instagram?
Oh, good question. I think it was actually just, cause at the start I didn't have I didn't have a good camera. I just wanted to show my friends what I was eating. So I just generally, I think it was a breakfast porridge or something like that, just to show people what I was eating. But
porridge is like the least photogenic thing that you could probably put up for your first photo.
I made it photogenic.
Yeah.
I did it way over the top, but no, it was nice. It wasn't until a couple of months later where I saw people starting to follow me more and more, requesting the recipes, that I decided to take it more seriously and get a camera. I was skiving off my job a lot to do these pictures.
Yeah. But I mean, you're self-taught in photography and styling and props, and I know you have a loft or an apartment filled with these things.
I wish I had a loft or apartment. It's literally in my bedroom in my parents' home in Cardiff. And my parents have been amazing. They've built me sort of shelves where I can put all these bowls and plates and stuff that I've collected from my travels. And yeah, that's a big thing to me now. Food photography, styling is something that I'm really passionate about.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back to your new book, Vegan 100. Awesome. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Maybe you're looking for a coat for yourself, or you want a bold look for your staff. You might even need a new style for your restaurant, whether it's modern, industrial, or farm-to-table. Whatever you're looking for, Happy Chef has got you covered. Their wide variety of chef apparel and products are perfect for teams of all sizes and styles. And with the industry's easiest custom embroidery, you can add your logo, name, or fun artwork to many of their other products in minutes. Here's what you do. Visit happychef.com and choose from their incredible selection. With only a couple clicks, you can customize many of their products to personalize your look. Right now, they're even offering free custom logo setup on all orders over $150, a $95 value totally free. Visit happychef.com now to order your free 2018 catalog featuring new styles and incredible comfort. Happy Chef, the perfect style, whatever your recipe.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Gaz Oakley, the avant-garde vegan, and his new book, Vegan 100. And he's not trying to trick you here, you know, you meat eaters. He's just trying to show you how good veganism can be. And I've been obsessing over a couple of your YouTube videos, and let's just say, so have 400 plus thousand people, the amount of subscribers, the amount of followers you have on Instagram, you're doing something right. And I can just tell right now, you have such a warm and personable rapport. How does that come across in a photo, in front of the camera for a video? Were you comfortable doing that at first?
Oh, no. I never thought I could do it. So the first time I stood in front of cameras for my YouTube videos, I was stiff, shy, really uncomfortable. But as I got into it and realized that, all I'm doing is cooking, and that's what I know how to do. That's the thing that I feel I'm good at. So I just got into it, and I thought that maybe the audience wouldn't sort of like my sort of demeanor, which is just chilled and just myself. Because lots of the time you see on YouTube and your certain TV chefs are really over the top and sort of in your face, but I'm totally not that. But no, people are liking my boring awkwardness.
Yeah, you think so it's quite good. Yeah, it is not boring at all. I mean, I watch your burrito video multiple times. Awesome. And again, I think it comes from someone who not only worked in a professional kitchen, but did eat meat before to understand that you want those mushrooms in your burrito crispy and you know,
full of umami.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But to coax that out, it can often be a ploy of like just throwing a lot of fat at it. But you're so smart in the way that you do texture modifications and layer flavors. And it obviously shows in this book, too. But I want to get at the foundational things. And those are the dairy replacements. You know, you make your own milks by nut milks. You make your own butter, and I'm air quoting, cream cheese, nacho cheese sauce, mozzarella. How do you make all those things? And why is that an important part to your pantry?
Well, it's sort of the household the items that you would always have in any kitchen, regardless of it, if it's vegan or not. So when I was coming up with the list of recipes going into my book, I was thinking, right, I'm going to need pastry in there because that's an important recipe for obviously any sort of tart or pie, you guys call it.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, well, I can't tell them to go and use shop-bought butter. I need to give them even if they do go and get a shop-bought butter, you know, I want to give them the option of being able to make it. So I thought, right, let me experiment. And that's how sort of the pantry section sort of grew and grew and grew. I love my pizza, so that's why the mozzarella was in there. But I'm glad there's a good amount of basics in there. Whether people use them, it's up to them. But it's really nice feeling when you create your homemade butter or your milks, and it's so cost effective, and you know exactly what's gone into these products.
So what's gone into them? I know it starts with nut milk, but how do you make your butter?
So you need to get that emulsion with oil and soy lecithin, which really helps make it really creamy. So that's the main ingredient. It's so simple to make, and it makes such a good batch where you can just stick it in the fridge or the freezer, and you're so cost effective.
And again, like these cheeses, I saw a photo of your mozzarella dippers.
Oh,
and
yes.
The fact that they pull like they do, too. I mean, you're recreating this texture that people know so well. Yeah. I mean, how were you able to do that with mozzarella?
So I had to do a lot of research, but tapioca starch, it's the magic ingredient to make them stretchy. And you can use corn flour, but tapioca starch has that real stretchiness, and those mozzarella dippers are doing really well on my YouTube channel. I didn't quite expect it, but so incredibly tasty.
Yeah, I mean, from the land of fish and chips, I feel like you're a very good fryer. And there are a lot of fried things in here, from your riff on Kentucky Fried Chicken, chicken nuggets, and that kind of stuff. That texture, that crispness, I think is lost often in veganism, or when people cook vegan food, they don't think about that texture. And how important is texture and layering those things to you?
I can definitely tell you've had years in the kitchens, because I don't know whether about you, but I was taught to get a series of textures in the dishes. You don't want everything to be the same texture. And it's so important when I was creating my dishes in the kitchens, and now, to get an element of crispness. And often that is from frying stuff. I don't mind frying stuff. I love it, as long as, and actually I find if you're using clean oil, if you're using a good quality oil, if you drain off the excess oil on kitchen paper, you know, it's never really fatty. You know, you get a light crisp crispness often, especially if you use stuff like panko breadcrumbs, which are already crispy. I love fried stuff. I love crispiness a lot. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
And you seemingly love bacon. What is streaky bacon?
I wasn't actually a huge bacon fan growing up. It just goes back to the point where I say that the dishes that I'm making, the recreation that I'm making, is to prove to non-vegans that they can still have this type of food when they go vegan. So when I speak to a lot of people, non-vegans, they say to me, oh, I could never go vegan, I love bacon too much. So it was my plan to come up with a bacon that is just as similar to actual bacon. So the streaky bacon is made from seitan. It took me a while to get right, but you can actually see the streak going through it. It's two different color seitan molded together, and it creates the most incredible crisp bacon, which is so, so good. And that's on my YouTube channel.
Yeah. And you also have coconut bacon bits. You have smoky tempeh bacon. You have aubergine or eggplant bacon. Then there are a lot of these other kind of meat replacers, like you said before, a breakfast sausage or a seitan filet steak Wellington. And that looks like an epic project. It's a lovely picture. Quarter pounders, chorizo vegan hot dogs, sticky barbecue ribs. So those foods that, you know, meat eaters or omnivores crave, like you said, aren't going to be missed if they choose to go vegan or choose not to eat meat that day. Yeah. There are all these dishes that can be recreated.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's such an excitement for me when I do nail these replacements at home. And my mum's recently, well, she's gone vegan just over a year ago now, so serving that up to my mum, whatever it is, a ribs or the steak or whatnot, she's so pleased. So if my mum gets that reaction, if I get the reaction, I'm sure that vegans all around the country and all around the world will get the same reaction, and non-vegans as well will realize that, yeah, we can still get that.
You know, vegans eat vegetables too, and we've rarely talked about some of your favorite vegetables and dishes in this book. What are some of your favorite vegetables and preparations?
Yeah, what I will say is that I don't live off these replacements constantly. Yeah. They're amazing for, special treats. I generally eat a whole foods diet, although that being in Brooklyn the last 2 days, I've eaten a lot of junk food.
Yeah.
It's great though. My favorite vegetables, butternut squash, kale, asparagus. I love mushrooms. Butternut squash is probably my favorite all-time vegetable because you can do so much to it. And pumpkin in general. Yeah, such an amazing
vegetable. What can you do to it other than the puree, the soup?
You can roast it whole, you can stuff it, you can make the skin crispy, you can make it into chips, wedges. What else can you do for it? You can make raviolis from it, you can make pasta with it, you can blend it into the pasta, loads of things. It's amazing.
Yeah, I actually, there was this picture.
I was going through my recipe book in my head.
But there was this Christmas time recipe, right? It was a stuffed squash.
Oh, yes.
That was gorgeous.
Yeah, and that's a good sort of segue onto my next sort of announcement that I've just written a Christmas book.
Oh, that's amazing.
So yeah, and I just today uploaded the finalized front cover onto my Instagram page, and that for me is an amazing book because I had the experience of writing the first one. I used the same food photographer. I was a lot more confident in the studio with digging out all the props, styling the food and whatnot. And the recipes are really good. So I'm really excited about that. And that stuffed squash, yeah, that's in the book as well because it did so well on the YouTube channel. It's a thing of beauty. Definitely is. And tastes great.
Well, if this was your freshman effort, the sophomoric one is only going to be that much better because this is a triumph.
Thank you so much.
Really well done job. And for all of you who don't follow Gaz Oakley yet, I'm assuming most people do, being that you have 200,000 and 400,000. Check out Avant Garde Vegan at Twitter, Instagram, avantgardevegan.com everything else.
I did say on YouTube that when I hit 1 million subscribers, it will be when I announce my my first restaurant. So I'm hoping people start subscribing me more and more quickly I can announce my first restaurant because it's something that's is a dream of mine. It has been a dream since I was a kid. So that's all I really want to do.
In Cardiff?
Wherever I settle.
Excellent. We'll be watching.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for being on. A big thank you to Happy Chef Uniforms as sponsors. Music by Cookies and David Tadashore Engineering. Miros Michael Harlan Turkel. Hope to have you back here. Listen to The Food Scene next Tuesday at 3. Cheers. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.